This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 29th of November, 2021, the day after a rather traumatic session on Friday. As we indicated, we didn't know where things could go, but wanted the folks to recognize the volatility potential, and we got it in spades. But interesting to see the markets where it was worst. So the U.S. equity market, of course, had a terrible session, but not anything approaching what we saw in Europe. And then we're seeing where there apparently was the most whiplash relative to prior themes, and perhaps relative to some of the leverage in the market, where we see something like oil and its tremendous meltdown. We'll get to you later, Ola, on that. But European equities, Peter, I mean, you know, I've got the chart here of the S&P 500 on slide two. It looks like just a chunky sell-off, garden variety, but that was not the case for Euro stocks.
No, as you eloquently pointed out on Twitter on Friday, or was it over the weekend, we had the biggest one-day move since the low point during the pandemic in March in Euro stocks 50, or was it stock 600?
I can't remember. It was stocks 50.
And Aussie yen and Brent crude. So it's quite naturally that market recalibrates the outlook of the uncertainty for this variant that we are seeing a little bit of bounce back. Also, the thin liquidity on Friday probably exacerbated the move. But as you can see on slide two, the different themes, not a big surprise. Travel and then crypto. I think it deserves some comments, because I mean, this whole idea, you know, it's a safe haven and blah blah blah. I mean, crypto is a full on correlated to liquidity. If there is a smack on, risk on, or smack risk off, I mean, crypto is there leading the charge. And I think we can solidly say that now. So all the other narratives, let's just forget about that. It is really, really going with where liquidity is going. Slide three, you can see the bounce back. I've put in this again because it's still the online versus offline, or growth versus value. So you have the Nasdaq 100 futures versus Euro stocks 50, and the orange one is Europe. You can see here a considerably bigger bounce back as predicted, but there's a spread over 10 trading days is still 5 percentage points. Actually, I before we go, I know it becomes a little bit of equities here, but now that we are talking Europe, just quickly, stocks to watch today on slide nine. Obviously, the Saxo travel baskets, there's a lot of European names in there. Maersk up 4%. They were down heavily on Friday, so I mean, because of the uncertainty on container shipping. And then on the healthcare equipment makers, you have Mercator Medical and Beiersdorf in Europe, and I've mentioned some other names from Japan and Singapore, some of the top makers of, you know, gloves and everything else related to, if we, you know, go into a more severe situation.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, this is a really a case of whiplash, because look at where this new outbreak has taken us, or a variant, and the uncertainty around it. We really don't know what the heck is going to happen with this thing. And you know, don't want to speculate too much on that. But the key reality on the ground is we have real action being taken by governments to limit travel, and in some cases merely travel from the original origins area of the outbreak in South Africa. In other cases, I look at Japan, where we're seeing a total ban on all foreign travel as of tomorrow. So there is real impact on the ground. There is uncertainty, even though we still don't know much about the transmissibility or the virulence of this variant of the virus. And Ola, as I was pointing out, I mean, oil, you know, just to talk about whiplash, you know, we're just talking about, is there enough oil supply in this market for where, as demand is normalizing, suddenly we have a demand problem. And then we had apparently some pretty ugly leverage in this market, and obviously exacerbated by those trading conditions on Friday with poor liquidity, U.S. holiday, et cetera, et cetera. So how are we supposed to find our feet here in the oil market?
Well, first of all, John, we need to get some more news from the scientists as to the wider impact. You are absolutely right. We're seeing already now, the market is already now pricing in a renewed drop in jet fuel demand. Jet fuel overall, before the pandemic broke out, was around 10% of global daily demand, and hasn't recovered to that level. So that's not going to it's not going to move the needle in terms of to justify the sell-off we had on Friday. But as you said, we just like we saw, I think it was back in 2018. We've had so many comments about $100 and 90 before Christmas during the past few months. So the market has become one-sided in their focus, potentially leading to option strategies, long calls, short puts, what have you. It's basically being being hit hard on Friday when the market start to sell off. Liquidity was poor, and that just exacerbated the sell off. As you can see on slide 7, in terms of levels, we found support after hitting the 200-day moving average in Brent. It was also a 61.8% retracement of the rally we had up from August. So technically, so it was the technical aspects that in the end halted the sell off. And now since then, we managed to bounce back 5%, around 5% so far today. But as you can see on the right hand side there on slide 7, it was a major move in percentage term. We haven't seen those since that carnage in March and April last year. So looking ahead, what can happen now? Well, Biden, obviously, the US administration getting what they want, but not due to their own action, but due to this virus focus. But what it has given OPEC Plus is basically an excuse to reduce their planned production increase for January. They meet on Thursday, and there's even been some speculation that it might turn around and cut production. Not something that Russia wants to play along with right now at this point in time. But it basically means that even if they could do cut production or stay away from hiking as they had originally planned, it will not really attract the same amount of protest from the US side, because this is the new situation as we say. So let's see where the week takes us. But the OPEC Plus will really be the key focus as we move towards Thursday.
Yeah, and as I was indicating on the whiplash front, not just in oil, but in terms of the Fed rate expectations, where all of a sudden we were looking at some of those acceptance speech comments from Brainard and Powell and the prominence of inflation concerns there, and clearly Biden very concerned on the inflation front, and now suddenly we're pricing out some of the Fed action for next year. This took a lot of the oomph out of the dollar in terms of versus the euro on Friday, but especially against the Japanese yen. And some of that lined up with the positioning issue as well. But just for a brief overview on slide 4, showing you the reaction function in the December 2022 Eurodollar short-term interest rate future, where you see about a full hike priced back out, at least from a bottom to top there in the Friday reaction. We've really unwound very little of that. I guess the market's saying, look, this is going to extend uncertainty enough to delay maybe 3 months or more, the first couple or three Fed rate hikes, but also the 10-year, similar reaction there. So concerns about long-term growth to some degree incorporated in that reaction. And that is the chart on the right, the 10-year Treasury U.S. T-note future. And then as talked about with the Japanese yen, we had the largest Aussie yen move, as Peter mentioned, we've seen since the pandemic for a single day on Friday. And look at the chart on slide 5. I mean, that's just technically speaking, you know, that's a very damaging blow to that chart. It's going to take a lot of doing to reverse that. And in dollar yen, somewhat similar, although there was less of a slide. Obviously, dollar yen caught really the wrong way around. We were at the peak of those Fed expectations. We're probably at peak positioning in dollar yen long by speculative positioning. And then suddenly we get this kind of news that sort of punctures that narrative and reverses it. So if you look at, in fact, I included your latest positioning from the U.S. futures market over the CFTC weekly report. Unfortunately, because of the holiday last week, the latest data has been delayed until today. Normally, it's out on Friday, but you get a general picture, and I imagine it might have even gotten worse because dollar yen recently extended above that 115 area. But on slide 6, you can see that the dollar long, a lot of that is in the Japanese yen. That's that sort of brown color, where you can see the yen being heavily shorted versus the US dollar. Euro is much less positioning. It's only just recently gotten sort of flat. So unbelievably, at this stage, we're still not seeing a big speculative short in the euro. Although we did see the euro backing up on Friday, again, for the same rationale, this elimination of some of the Fed tightening for next year. Okay, let's look at one thing, one news item I wanted to mention. Actually, let's round out the commodity space, Ulu, with more gold disappointment, I have to say, from my perspective at least. But what's your perspective on what gold told us about its reaction on Friday?
Yeah, well, just the headline, it just once again fails to shine amid all the risk reduction seen elsewhere. And that will raise a few eyebrows when you have a day where yields collapse, the dollars weakens, you got rising volatility in the stock market, and the gold market doesn't really do much. Well, it moved above 1800, found resistance at 1816. That was the first proper resistance level, and it failed at that level, and now back down again. We've been holding above that 1780 area now 4 days in a row, so that is clearly the support to the downside that needs to hold. But I think it just goes to show once again, just like we saw last year, when the market is in general risk off mode, you're not really thinking about adding new position, you just think about reducing risk, and that also did hurt the gold market. But just to completely finish off the commodities space, I just want to highlight the European gas and power market. We are entering, we're starting the week on a tear here. We are trading higher. We got the emission contract at a new record high on the prospect for more coal to be burned. We got below average temperatures expected for the next 2 weeks. Russian flows are still not coming. So at least one area of the commodity space that's going up, unfortunately, a very wrong one, because that's just adding to the cost of being a European at this moment in time.
Yeah, it's cold here in Copenhagen this morning, that's for sure. One news item I wanted to bring up, and you highlighted that there would be focus on this in our quick take last week, Peter, and that was the Black Friday sales in the U.S. So the Black Friday is the Friday after Thanksgiving, traditionally a big day for retail traffic. And just interesting to see these numbers. So, you know, obviously some behavior change has been there because of maybe some lack of interest in going out and shopping by some shoppers still in the U.S. with the virus, et cetera. But there was down 28%. Black Friday shopping relative to 2019, so pre-pandemic levels, even though it was way up from last year's levels where there was far more virus impact. And then on the comparative amounts online, it was actually 100 million lower, 8.9 billion versus 9 billion in 2019. I would say that's a little bit of a disappointment, to say least, given, you know, there's been some inflation in those numbers as well. So any take on that, Peter? There is the narrative offsetting that the glass half full or more positive spin could be that Americans are bringing their spending, spreading it out and bringing it forward because of these known supply chain shortages and concerns that they're not going to be able to get those key Christmas gifts that they would otherwise might have waited for in past years.
I think if you look at the U.S. retail sales and you look at the trend growth prior to the pandemic, and then, you know, the fall off and then the rebound and then the current trend, I mean, how much more can they spend even on a Black Friday, right? I mean, it's the Americans are spending a lot of money on goods. So I think, as you said, rightly said, John, I mean, I think it has been spread out. I wouldn't put too much emphasis on these numbers. I think everything, like with so many other things in our economy, everything is up for grasp and interpretation. And there's been so much upheaval on also shipping and supply constraints, etc. Right. So, but on slide 10, talking about companies, we have earnings. They're still dripping into the marketplace. Obviously, not that is that important as it was a month ago, but we still have some interesting cases. I've highlighted that in red on slide 10. So today we have Li Auto, which is part of the little group of independent electrical vehicle makers in China that are really, you know, pushing forward here and will be a force over the coming years for sure. And Li Auto and XPeng has sort of been following each other on delivery numbers, as you can see on the chart to the right. And Li Auto have always, most of the quarters been ahead of XPeng, and XPeng had a very, very good Q3 where they overtook NIO, as we talked about over a week ago. And I think that it's changing the whole narrative, and it puts a high valuation and more positive sentiment on XPeng versus NIO, which is sort of stuck in the mud here. So I think there's pressure on Li Auto to deliver as good a quarter as XPeng. So we'll obviously be watching that. The earnings releases, Li Auto is traded, by the way, in the US via an ADR, and the earnings release will be out before the market opens. And then tomorrow, Salesforce, the up and coming company trying to fight on computer applications against Microsoft, trying to create their own little ecosystem there, obviously not in operating systems, but in everything else on top of an operating system. Wednesday, Snowflake on cloud, CrowdStrike, one of the fastest growing, top three fastest growing cybersecurity companies in the world. Elastic out of the Netherlands. a very interesting play in the whole realm of data and data analytics, etc. Also, cloud. Thursday, DocuSign, which is one of those, you know, very popular pandemic stocks, which have had troubles lately to actually continuing with their momentum, to say that there's a lot of these pandemic stocks that are down 50 to 70% from the peak. So let's see how DocuSign's performs on Thursday.
All right. And that leaves us with the macro calendar for the rest of the week, a ridiculous number of items on the schedule. For today, I won't highlight those because I think it's really about markets trying to find their feet after Friday. And U.S. President Biden will be speaking on the response to this Omicron variant out later. So the markets may be a little bit anticipatory around that if it's going to be travel restrictions, et cetera. And then we have Powell and Treasury Secretary Yellen out testifying tomorrow nominally about the CARES Act and the pandemic response. But of course, there could be questions on and some you know, banging on the podium about inflation, et cetera. So it could be interesting to see the types of responses to those questions. As well, the consumer confidence number out of the U.S., which is, you know, this is the conference board number, which is a different series from the Michigan sentiment number. That Michigan sentiment number suggesting that clearly U.S. consumers are very concerned about something, and it's certainly not jobs because they're certainly able to find a job if they want one, at least according to the shortage of labor market supply evidence in a number of surveys, more about inflation and the sentiment that Michigan sentiment survey is showing that concern. It's been less, it's showing up less in the consumer confidence survey, the conference board one. So interesting to see if that divergence continues, even though there is sort of directional sympathy. And then all the usual manufacturing ISM and PMIs starting on Wednesday, although we've seen the flash numbers from elsewhere already. And of course, the U.S. jobs report on Friday, this being the first week of the first Friday of the month of December on Friday. So we continue to urge caution on, you know, the market's attempt to draw conclusions about this. We're unwilling to draw any conclusions on the virus and suggest that it's a very uncomfortable development relative to how the market was positioned. So it's I think it's going to be a tricky week across asset classes. So keep that in mind, and we'll be back tomorrow with Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.